May 8, 2015. Let's do this.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I'm
your hostess, Amber Matz.
And your host, Kyle Hoffmeyer.
Addison Berry. I am your hostess.
Guess what time it is? It's time for another Drupalize Me podcast. Well, all right. Welcome to episode 63 of the Drupalize Me podcast. I'm going to be your host this week, Kyle Hoffmeyer, and this one's going to be a cool one. It's the Sci-Fi Project. Well, hey. All right. Thanks for joining me again here on another Drupalize Me podcast. This one's going to be an interesting one because it's about a website in general and about all the cool things that Lolbot did to build this website. And if you're a science fiction fan and you actually like and love the Sci-Fi Network, this is going to be the podcast for you. Because what we're going to talk about is Lolbot was actually hired to redo the entire sci-fi.com website. And I've got two Lolbots that were, they were on the project for quite a long time, and they're pretty much the men behind it, as I would like to say. I'm here with Mike Herschel. Mike, how you doing?
Excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. And I'm also here with Chris Albrecht. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great, Kyle.
All right. And I wanted to get you guys on the podcast because the website is freaking awesome. It is a sweet-looking website, and I mean, I don't even know how you guys made Drupal do half this type of stuff that this website is doing, so I think it'd be pretty cool for you guys to, you know, get a chance to brag about how awesome you are and how hard you worked to make this website happen. But I guess the first part is, why did Sci-Fi come to us? What did they need to have done? Apparently their other site wasn't even running Drupal, but what was the big thing that we started out doing here?
So we came on as Lolbot to migrate some of the content they had on the original sci-fi.com, which was not a Drupal site. Migrate it into a Drupal 7 site and give it a complete facelift, make it responsive and really improve the overall usability of it and the user experience with some, you know, awesome videos, some cool designs, some really nice scroll interactions, really kind of bring it up to the most modern look and feel as we could, you know, keep it contending with the rest of the internet out there. And we've done a number of other projects for NBC Universal sites. So we had a good relationship with them to start with, and they said, let's bring Lolbot in and really knock this one out of the park. And I think we did.
Oh, no, I think it's a sweet site. I've been playing with it all morning, getting ready for this podcast. And it's some of the stuff that's happening with the scrolling and all that type of stuff, which you'll have to explain to me because it's pretty crazy stuff. It's pretty sweet. So at what point, how many bots did we actually have working on this project?
Man, we started with, well, Mike, you came on before I did, so it was supposed to be just you and me as permanent Lolbots, and we had two contractors that we got a shout-out to. Mike Bailey and Sid Chatria were, these guys stuck with it and worked some hard nights to get this thing done. But how many, Mike, how many did we get up to at one point?
We had up to 11. You know, there were specific periods while other bots were rolling off other projects after launches, especially around Christmas time, we had a bunch of bots kind of roll off the MSNBC project for a little bit and pop in just to help out, to do a lot of code reviews and stuff. So at one point we had up to 11 people, and then, you know, we tapered back down after launch, and we stuck around after launch for a couple months, and at that point we were down to four developers.
Dang, 11 throughout the project.
Mm-hmm. At times.
All at once, but still.
That's I'd say in general, like at any given point, we had maybe an average of like five when we were like kind of hot and heavy.
Dang, that's awesome. Well, I'm going to start diving into some of this stuff because this site has some crazy things going on, the first thing that you can see off the bat is just basically it's complete front end. It's look and feel, the way things happen as you scroll, things that are going on. What was so special about this project? What were some of the technologies you used to make these things happen?
So what made this project so special? So number one, it does have like a really complex front end, which we can kind of get into. And then there's like a whole bunch of integration with other technologies. You know, we integrated in with some different movie services and social networking services that we can kind of get into. But I mean, honestly, it's kind of just the whole package, you know, like everything is included with the website, you know, videos integrated in. And I mean, Chris, if you want to expand on that. And
yeah, well, I'd say even before we get to the videos, because that took the longest to get in. And but the stuff that we had to try and deal with right out of the box were the designs that came back were, you know, from the people who did the wireframes and the actual design of the site, were so crazy with what they wanted to do in these scroll interactions, which you'll see on the homepage of sci-fi.com. So that in and of itself, those scroll interactions, and then the tile feed that is, that's all those squares that appear below those giant hero images. Why don't we start with that? Mike, talk, how the heck did you guys come up with that? Because that's still, I did back-end stuff. I don't know how the heck you guys made that work.
Yeah, so that was probably the scroll interactions was the most complicated thing that I did for the site. So, and just to kind of make them performant, you know, like the site's already really, really heavy just because it's an image-heavy site. You know, if our listeners aren't looking at it right now, it's basically it just has a huge hero that are that is stacked upon multiple heroes, and as you scroll, the one hero kind of slides up to reveal. Reveal other heroes. Below that, there's what we call a tile feed, which is like a series of kind of randomly placed rectangles that kind of like are put into place like bricks. And as you scroll down, like little leaderboard ads slide out to reveal. And it's a really, really cool effect. So the way that it's done is we bind all these animations to the scroll event. So as the scroll event's firing, as you're moving down the page, the position, the elements are actually set to position fix, and then they're using CSS transforms to actually kind of bind them to move around to create the appearance of scrolling. But because we're just creating the appearance of scrolling, we can actually stop them, start them, and push them around in a lot of different ways and kind of like reveal the ad when appropriate, et cetera. And so like as that's happening, you know, the browser wants to repaint the page, you know, which can bog down the computer. So we do a lot of like really interesting kind of CSS hacks to promote each of these elements that are being transformed around into its own layer. So instead of the browser actually having to repaint these various different layers, it just has to composite them, which is just combining the layers, which is a lot more performant because it's done on your computer's GPU as opposed to CPU. So it's a lot quicker. And it's something I learned a lot about, and it was a lot of fun kind of troubleshooting that and using some of the various different tools and to kind of make that really performant. And yeah, it really, really kicks ass in my opinion. I'm really proud of it.
No, that's actually one of the things I like the most about the site, especially like not only the stuff that's happening and then the menu at the top as you scroll and pull it down, that type of stuff. Now, I have out of curiosity, most of that doesn't happen on, let's say, if you're looking at it on a mobile site. Is that just because mobile doesn't look at scrolling, or did you have to do something completely different so mobile, it's not screwing up the mobile version of it?
Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head right there. So when you're animating stuff on mobile, as you're actually scrolling, most mobile browsers will actually pause any type of JavaScript or animation events and stuff like that. So if we run these animations on mobile, what will happen is you'll have like a really janky experience where you start swiping and the scroll event's firing on mobile, but then at the same time, you know, the animation isn't processing, so it looks like nothing's happening. But then when you let go, it'll just kind of jump to where it should be without that intermediate animation. And there's a lot of different ways to try to get around that, but nothing worked perfectly. You know, we tried to kind of binding it to touch move and a lot of different things. But the way that we ended up handling that is we have some client-side user agent detection. So if it detects a mobile browser, what it'll do is it'll transition the main the main hero into a flex slider, which a flex slider is basically like kind of an image carousel, which, you know, it is touch sensitive where you can swipe right or left, and it'll disable a lot of the scroll events below and kind of like fix everything so it just looks good. And honestly, that's a better way to go anyway, just because a lot of these scroll events are very, you know, processor and CPU and GPU intensive. And, you know, your mobile phone doesn't have as beefy of a processor as your laptop or your desktop does. So by limiting that on your mobile device, it makes for a much smoother experience, which is pretty cool. And you can also, if you're on a desktop browser, you can actually shrink down under 600. If you go under the 650 pixel breakpoint, it'll also switch to the flex lighter view.
Dang, yeah. I mean, not only does this thing look awesome, but you guys have this 100% responsive. I've had my iPhone out, my iPad out, and then playing with it on the desktop, just seeing all the different things that happen differently. It's pretty sweet. I mean, what type of front-end technologies did you use? I mean, I'm sure this is not all inline CSS, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we used a lot of font tags, maybe some blank tags. We used tables to build the layouts.
100% marquee tags to get that scroll to slide up.
Yeah, it's responsive in Netscape Navigator. And it works on my mom's Windows Millennium machine. <You're right. laughs> So, like, as far as technologies, I mean, we didn't use like a crazy stack. You know, we used, of course, SAS. We used Compass to compile it, just the standard Ruby version of Compass. We used Grunt for a task runner. Gosh, what else? You know, we use jQuery to do a lot of the heavy lifting for the JavaScript animations and stuff like that. And a lot of it was just like custom. You know, there was like no libraries used to manage the scrolling, like Scroller. We looked at various different libraries used to manage that, and nothing really fit what we were doing.
Well, we used one called Packery, a jQuery plugin to do the tile, right?
Yeah, that is true. So, thanks for that reminder. So we did use a jQuery plugin called Packery to do the tile feeds. So like the tile is, you know, those little squares or rectangles that appear below the main hero, and what it will do is it'll automatically kind of arrange those into a wall, you know, and it'll do that responsively. So depending on your breakpoint, it'll either organize itself into just like a one column stack, a two column stack, a three column stack, or a four column stack, which is kind of complicated. You can't just use floats because some of the tiles in there are double width, and or some of the tiles are actually like half height too, which we have to do some custom JavaScript to combine those. And so, yeah.
It's one of those things that when you probably get the mocks, it's almost like, maybe you guys should learn how the web works before you ask us to do that. But instead, you guys just made it work.
You know, I want to give a shout out to the design group, WorkCo. Like, you know, they really did a great job as far as the design. It took a lot of work to do it, but that's our job, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's take a break here. I'm going to cover some things that are going on. Not too much, but an obvious, very large thing happening next week. DrupalCon LA. There's going to be a lot of Lullabots there. In fact, Lullabot and Drupalize Me both have a booth, one gigantic booth that we're sharing. Come see us. Come say hello. The entire Drupalize Me team will be there. And then also, speaking of the Sci-Fi Project, Wednesday at 2:15, they're going to be at the expo stage. Lullabot's actually going to be doing a presentation on the Sci-Fi Project. So if you enjoyed what you learned here in this podcast, I'd go check that out. You'll get to learn a ton more. In the Drupalize Me world, this week we released and started our hands-on with the domain access. So check that series out. We're going to keep those coming out over the next week or so. Other than that, let's keep this podcast going. So besides the front-end technologies, is there anything specific Drupal-wise that was used on this site? I mean, everyone's going to look at that going, is that panels going on there or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we relied heavily on panels for all the pages. That's pretty much the driver behind every page we've got. It has its own panels layout in one form or another. Just makes it easy to use the layout reuse. So that really nothing too complicated there. Lots of views, lots of panels. We used mini panels to do a couple of pieces where we wanted to have sort of combination blocks. So in the top right corner, you'll see a lot of places, like on TV shows specifically, we'll have these little taglines, Monday at 9, 8 Central, or you know, whenever the show airs next, returning in January. And then next to that, you'll have the login link for your cable TV provider. So we took those two blocks, which are completely separate pieces, put them into a mini panel, and then dropped the mini panel into the layout that way. And we did actually use context in a few places, too. Normally, I try not to use both together, but they both have their advantages. So the pieces of the layout that appear on basically every page of the site, like your login links or your footers. Footer was another mini panel, all those little blocks together. Some are menus, some are custom lists. We used context to place those global blocks. And I don't think we really used it for too much else than that, but it worked out well. It really kept the number of layouts and templates that we needed to a minimum, so we could maximize the reuse that way. And it's just great to see every page of the site in one place when you go to the page manager. And if I could do my own shameless plug, I'll be actually doing some training on how we did that and how to use panels for that sort of thing at Drupal Camp Denver coming up. So if anyone wants to learn more about that, I'll be teaching about that. But that's really
all
it is.
Drupal Camp Colorado?
Yeah, Drupal Camp Colorado in Denver.
Get it straight, Chris.
I know.
Your branding is off, man.
I can't read and talk at the same time.
You're not chewing gum, are you?
No gum.
Well, Lullabot has worked with NBC Universal on quite a few other projects with them, and this being another one, obviously. What would you say was different about this than some of the other sites that we've had to do?
I'll let you handle this, Chris.
Yeah. So, well, honestly, this was my first big project at Lullabot, so it's hard to say what was done differently. From what I understand, when we brought in Seth Brown and we brought in James Sansbury as sort of technical leads and project managers to help us keep things moving and hit our deadlines, the things that we did differently on this one were that we had our design and our wireframes come in from separate companies, from separate organizations, and had to try and make all that fit together. And we did it in probably not the most optimal way. We had to make a lot of estimations and assumptions without having all the materials right in front of us. And that ended up putting us in a place where we had to work a few extra hours, or our deadlines started to overlap with big holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, New Year's, because we were doing such crazy things with this front end, as Mike was talking about. This whole crazy scrolling and the video feeds that we have in the website haven't been done on any NBCU site to date. Although they're now being, you know, we sort of set the bar for a few others, if I think I can safe saying that. So the others that we're working on right now are starting to leverage some of the stuff we did and take that and integrate it into those sites as well. So, that's all I really had to say about that part was it was trying to get
Some of the cool things that we've done that like other sites, the other NBCU sites haven't done yet is, you know, the integrated video, you know, which we have a couple different video players, and also the deep link in to their mobile app. So if you try to watch a full episode on a mobile device, you know, either an Android or an iPhone, or you know, if you have something different and you go to that, it'll actually prompt you. It'll actually launch either the App Store so you can download the Sci-Fi mobile app, or it will deep link into the app and launch the actual video from the app itself, which is kind of a cool feature.
Yeah, that's something I've never seen done before. So the video, I learned a lot about how video works on the web by doing this site, because you have to think about who owns the video, where it's allowed to be displayed, whether it needs to have a specific authentication to it or not, and the stream that it's coming from. So we have at least three different types of video player on sci-fi.com. If you go to sci-fi.com/live, there's a live player. You can actually watch what's on TV right now on your computer, as long as you have a cable authentication that you can sign into, like, you know, Comcast or Cox Cable or Time Warner. And so that's one player right there. There's another one that does little clips of videos that you don't need authentication to watch, so you can have those just start playing on your computer without having to sign into anything. If you try those on your phone, it'll suggest that you go to the Sci-Fi Now app, but those should play on your phone.
Yeah, they will.
So the most complicated ones, though, and I've got to give a lot of credit to our developers, Mike Bailey and James Sainsbury, who really spent so much time trying to get this all figured out, mostly Mike Bailey on these, were the authentication ones. Mike got the video playing, and James did the part where it'll actually link you into the app. So if there's a full episode, like Mike was just saying, it usually has to have some sort of authentication to have it play on your computer. You know, if I could go down to my TV and watch the latest episode of Haven on, you know, on television, I can't just go to my computer and watch it for free. I've got to sign in with my cable provider. So on your phone, that's not allowed at all. You have to have the app to do that. So we had the authentication piece set up to log into your cable provider through the website. But if you pull it up on your mobile phone or your tablet, there are certain licensing things about that I still don't completely understand.
Yeah.
But what will happen is, this is the deep linking Mike was just talking about. If you have the app, the Sci-Fi Now app downloaded and installed on your phone or your tablet, then you go to a full episode page on the website, it will actually, if you have it installed, will take you to that app and start the video playing automatically. So it takes you right in, almost a seamless process. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a complicated piece to figure out to make sure that it happens only on the right videos and that the authentication piece is doing the right checking and, you know, all that sort of stuff behind the scenes. But it is a really, really cool thing, and that's something that we haven't done yet either on the other services, the other platforms that we've done for NBCU. So that was really cool to get in.
So wait, does it actually launch the app, or is it just like almost getting a feed from the app in the background and it's still playing in the web?
Nope,
no, it launches the app.
Okay, so you are unable to watch videos on the responsive site without the app installed.
Well, on a mobile phone.
On a mobile phone, right. Okay.
Yeah. You can on a desktop if you have a really small screen, so it's not really responsive. It's more of a user agent type thing.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Dang, that's crazy stuff going on there. I mean, how many
external
services are happening?
I was just going to expand on that. You know, content rules and everything is really, really difficult. You know, like there's various different copyrights and copyright holders that have agreements spanning, and so it gets complicated pretty quick. So, yeah. Anyway, what was your question, Kyle?
No, you obviously had to integrate with the cable providers and whatever you did with that. But what other types of stuff did you have to integrate with? Like, I mean, it sounds like there's a bunch of external providers of some kind that were involved in this.
Yeah, there are a few. So there are services that handle those sorts of things, so you don't have to, you know, build them all from scratch. You just need to integrate them, configure them, and I make it sound very easy, though they were some of the most complex pieces, because some of them use Adobe Flash to do some authentication or to get the ads to display in the right place. Obviously, it's an advertisement revenue platform, so even the videos before they start playing will show you ads because they've got to make their money somehow to support it. So trying to make that all work together was kind of rough, but there are systems that are built for that. So we had to integrate things like Adobe Pass. There's a service called TVE, Television Everywhere, that will stream lots of metadata and create the content for you. So we were importing and sort of, you know, really live importing content to the site that would have that sort of stuff built in. The scheduling tool was something even completely separate from that. You could go to sci-fi.com/schedule and get a TV guide of what's on in your area. So the complications in that are, what time zone are you in? And if you've ever tried to figure out time and dates on the web, oh my God, time zones and daylight savings time are a nightmare. So that piece was really rough to try and get in. But there is a service that actually supports just TV guide data. So you plug it in and you tell it what you're looking for, do the right configuration, and it will give you a feed of what's on what channels at what time. So we had to integrate a few pieces like that. I think we used Rovi to do the scheduling. That's for the back end, for the video, for the schedule. Those were the big pieces. The actual content management, the episodes, the TV shows, the movies, are all handled by the sci-fi.com team, the content team, through a system called MPX, which is basically the video player and video management system. So we're actually importing data from that. They control all that video content from that separate system, and we bring it into the website, display it in the right way, and make sure the authentication pieces are set up correctly. So there were a lot of third-party pieces like that to make all that whole video experience really come together for the user. So for the back end, I think those were the biggest integrations that we had to do there. And then we used to get some of the social media in together. We were trying to use things like Gigya and Livefire to get some of the commenting working, to get the social integrations together. And we used just OAuth with Twitter and Instagram to have these social feeds kind of show up on the homepage and on the show pages as well. But I can let Mike talk about how we did that.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of that was done in the back end as far as like Twitter and Instagram. Basically, it's... What is it? I think Sid worked on it the most. Mm-hmm. He basically created a TPL file, like a template file for me, where the content editors would basically create a new piece of content by just pasting in the URL to Instagram or tweet or something like that. It would automatically authenticate through OAuth or something like that. And so it would pull down the data. So at that point, I had access from a theming layer to all these variables, you know, so I could like, you know, have the Twitter username, the image and all that. At that point, it's just standard CSS and theming and just getting it to look good, you know, and we integrated that into the tile feed. So if you go to the webpage and you see like a tweet or Instagram feed in there, it'll just look like a regular tile, and the image will be the background image, and it kind of looks really good. You know, there's not really too much to talk about, at least from a front end standpoint, because there's nothing really crazy going on. But Sid really made it easy for me to go ahead and do that. So, yeah.
Now, okay, you guys are mentioning a ton of stuff. How did mm-hmm. you, I mean, there had to have been some type of deadline in this thing. How did you guys meet these deadlines with this amount of, I mean...
it was really complicated, you know, and it was a lot, you know, like, and there was a situation where, you know, we didn't get our designs quite as soon as we needed to, and you know, there was a lot of back and forth, you know, on changing stuff around a little bit after, as client projects tend to be, you know. We did end up for launch, we ended up de-scoping a couple, like a landing page and also the blogs, which we integrated in post-launch. So like the movies landing page and the blog functionality and stuff like that. But there was just various different things. And honestly, you know, toward the end, we were just working. We were working hard. You know, there was... You know, GitHub will give us the cool graph of commits, and you can see that graph of commits where it's just like, oh, it just goes really high right before launch, and we were just committing stuff like crazy and just getting everything in there, and it was honestly like the biggest factor is just like hard work and kicking ass.
Yeah, we did a lot of that, and I'll give a lot of credit as well to our the project managers who came in and really set us in line. Being this was my first big Lullabot project, I wasn't sure exactly what to expect. So when I came in and they told us that the deadline to get stuff done was 2 months away and we were just getting our wireframes, I'm like, that sounds like it might be a little aggressive, but I think we could do it, you know, being the ever optimistic yet slightly naive developer. Yeah, we can get that done, no problem. And then I realized, no, we can't get that done. There's a problem. So we ended up, the most important thing to me was making sure that we kept the clients involved in the process and that we set our expectations accordingly. Because it's very easy to, as most back-end developers know, you can just sort of bury your head and go, like, it has to get done, it has to get done, and you drive and drive and you forget when you're supposed to eat and sleep and those sorts of things. And that's never a good way to go. So we ended up setting up daily meetings every morning to just you know, quick scrum. What did you do? What are you working on? What's coming next? Is there anything blocking you? And we did that not only with the Lullabot team, but we brought the sci-fi team and the clients in as well. And we would all talk about what was going on. And that really kept everyone in the loop and kept us from having to, you know, if you ever get to that point where you start pointing at your statement of work, saying, well, this is what we promised, this is what we're doing, you've already lost the battle. And we never once got to that point. That both sides of the team worked really, really well together. And like Mike explained, there were some things where we realized we couldn't get these done in time. Like, what do we actually have to have for a launchable product? And what can we safely say, we will hold on to this and then build it as soon as we get the site launched and add these pieces in? So there were a number of kind of sections of the site that ended up being de-scoped for the initial launch to make sure we could hit some of these launch dates, which in reality we did have to push back a little bit. You know, there were clearly some big events that on Sci-Fi's network that they wanted to have the site launched for, new shows that were appearing and premieres that were coming up. So we were trying our best to try and hit some of those dates, but to get a lot of these pieces in that we needed to have in, to get the videos working right, to make sure it worked across all devices, Android, iOS, on desktop, it was a lot of work. And the biggest thing was, let's just make sure we're all on the same page and we talk about, here's what we think we can do, here's what we know we can do, where can we pare back, where can we push stuff to after launch. And it really made all the difference having that frequent and open conversation with the client. Obviously, not every client is going to be the same, but I'll give a lot of credit to the Sci-Fi team. Worked with us and never really complained about anything. They understood where we were coming from. They knew that it was a lot to take on, and we just worked out what we could do and when we could do it. So we ended up hitting our deadlines, even though they started to fall right around the holidays and people were taking vacations. But we were very lucky that we had some other Lullabots around who were kind of coming off their own projects, who had a lot of experience doing this sort of stuff before, and they were able to jump right in and with very, very little ramp-up time just help us out and really take a lot of the load off our shoulders with some of the heavier back-end things, with some of the peer reviews to make sure the code was working, to test some of the new features that were coming out before we pushed them up. I almost forgot to mention as well, Mike's cohort for a large part of the project from the front end side, Jeremy Caldwell, was incredible too, because I had both of you guys on the front end for a very long time before we brought in other Lullabots. And man, I could give anything to you guys and be like, okay, yeah, here we go. Wow, okay, that's easy. What's next? We had a very good system set up technologically as well, using GitHub as our main repository, but we actually ran on GitHub issues as our issue management tool for the entire length of the time we were on the project. And man, we ran through thousands of issues and somehow managed to keep it together with that, using tools like waffle.io to sort of Kanban things out, using a system that we've put together called Tugboat that allows us to do quick and easy automated testing of different features. So you can create a pull request, submit that up, and it will build out a fully functional site using the latest database and design with your feature added to it to make sure it doesn't break anything or to test regressions while you can still use your local to keep going on your next topic. That was invaluable, really, for how much work we started to pump through and how to onboard new devs. Having that process laid out and having a tool like that where we could test a certain feature and then go back and work on something else while it's spinning up a site to test that separate feature let us really, I mean, we were punching through 30, 40 tickets a day, just knocking stuff out at our highest point, and that was right over the holidays too. That was really impressive.
I mean, good thing Mike doesn't like to sleep, so you're all right anyways. that guy loves to work 24/7.
How does he stay so handsome when he doesn't sleep? I don't know.
He has one good looking guy, and he doesn't even. It's all natural. He doesn't have to work at it because he's too busy building websites.
Exactly.
Yeah, I really can't disagree with either of those. It's just really good genes.
So with all that craziness, how did launch go? I mean, did you guys have like a URL that you tested everything on before you did this? I mean, what was the launch of all like?
So we ended up launching on a Tuesday morning.
The best time to launch.
Yeah, early in the morning, you know. So it is good because, you know, if you do it early in the morning, you don't have this huge jump of traffic getting to the website all at once. It kind of primes the caches and the CDNs and everything like that. So, and then we can kind of monitor issues as they go through. We ended up the night before that Monday night, we ended up all getting in on a hangout, and there was eight of us in there, and we were just kind of celebrating, you know. We all had beers and we're just hanging out, and we ended up, it was like at maybe like around 10 o'clock at night, and we ended up finding this one issue that was potentially going to delay the launch of the site. And the issue is that if you go to the bottom of the tile feed on any of the pages, you'll see a load more button. And the problem was, when you hit that load more button, the tiles would just kind of, they wouldn't organize themselves into the feed. They would just stay in one column. So that was obviously broken. And this was something that the regression had been introduced by some advertising JavaScript. So James Sansbury ended up being the hero on that and ended up debugging it pretty quickly. And we got that hot fixed up onto the server. The launch went really, really smooth the next morning. And, you know, everything was just kind of coasting at that point. And it was a situation where it's like a big weight off of our shoulders. We're just, And that was a great feeling.
Yeah, that was amazing. When those few days leading up to launch, we were all, you know, kind of working weekends, just testing the crap out of everything, like trying to find any little bug we could to make sure it was all working. So was it Monday night that we were supposed to try and sleep? Everyone had been on for like I don't know how many hours, and so we started to drop off. Like, okay, I think we're all right. We're gonna change the DNS overnight, and it should come up around 5 a.m. And so we were working with the guys over at the sci-fi side to get that changed up. And like, all right, East Coast time, you guys come on at 5 a.m. and you know, just be ready to roll. We're gonna switch it. The DNS will propagate out, and you guys be there to catch anything that falls. I'm like, all right. So I'm Mountain time. I'm in Denver, so that's 3 a.m. for me. I'm like, yeah, you guys handle that. I'll come on at 5 a.m. my time, and we'll make sure the live player's working. We'll check all this sort of stuff and be ready to catch this stuff. So I woke up at 5 a.m., came in, checked everything out, and saw who was on IRC. I'm like, all right, so how's everything going? And everyone's kind of like, go back to sleep. I'm like, really? Everything's good? You're like, yeah, it's so far we're looking good. Everything's up and running the way we thought it would. And one or two tiny things here and there, but I'm like, all right, I don't feel comfortable just going back to sleep. I'm already up, and I might as well test out the live player for a few hours while this marathon is going on. So I sat there and watched like a Destination Truth marathon or something like that, just to make sure everything was working. Or just, you know, let's just put on Haven and watch every episode from season 13 and see how it transitions from one episode to the next. And yeah, but those are things you got to test. Yeah, it's occupational hazard.
Yeah, when you're forced to watch cool television.
I remember waking up in the morning, you know, that morning, and the first thing I did was like, you know, yeah, I had my cell phone right beside me. I ended up unlocking it and just going www.sci-fi.com just to see if it was actually up. You know, is this real? And it was.
You should have just put a little animated GIF of a guy with a shovel and he's doing some dirt.
Under construction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, man, that'd be classic.
So now that you're basically coming off of this project, what did you learn? What do you think you guys would do differently?
Oh man, so like I front end wise, I learned a lot, and I think that everything came together really well. There's not too much I would do differently. There's a couple different ways I would do the templates. Like, for example, we have some display suite integrated in there that we thought we were going to make use of, but we didn't. But it's still in there. Let's see what else. I wish we had a little bit more time to kind of onboard Sci-Fi's developers, honestly. You know, their developers kind of came on literally 2 days before we rolled off. And, you know, at that point, we were kind of trying to do as much integrated and as much stuff as we could before we rolled off. So I didn't really have enough time to kind of develop a relationship with them or talk with them. which is, you know, kind of unfortunate. But other than that, like, it was great. What about you, Chris?
Man, what would I do differently? I don't know that there's so much that's it's hard to control when it comes to projects like this. And anyone who's built a big project will know, like, when you're doing wireframes and design comps and trying to architect things and the content hasn't been fully fleshed out in some cases, you know, that's, if I were to try and change anything, it's like I'd want all those right up front so we could be more accurate from the beginning with our estimations and our timelines and budgets. But that's, it's so rare that you actually get all that stuff in that time. You know, no project ever runs that way. So, you know, I would have preferred not to have worked as many long hours or those weekends that I did. But in the end, it was totally worth it. And I didn't mind it at all. It was never, I never once came, like, woke up in the morning and said, dang, I really don't want to go to work today. There was times I said, man, I really want to go back to sleep, or I'd rather go out this weekend and hang out with my friends. But, you know, one or two sacrifices here or there. But I never really didn't want to come to work. I enjoyed the project that we were working on because the people were so, you know, just so awesome to work with and positive and helpful. And I learned so much that it made it fun to do the job. And that was on both sides, from Lullabot to Sci-Fi as well. Everybody was just really encouraging and helpful and fun to work with. And we came out with a really great project. I learned a ton about, from ways to set up your Drupal site, to organize your files, to make it, you know, to make Drush work better, to have to use some custom tools, all the way up to just managing a project and how to set expectations the right way and how to keep your team members involved and productive. I learned a ton from this project and from a lot of people. There's a lot of work that went in behind the scenes to help us keep our deadlines met and to help us really put out a good product and keep up what I hope is still a good relationship with the Sci-Fi team. I know they told me that they've got a little bit of maybe some website envy happening around the office over there. Some of the other brands are looking at sci-fi.com and saying, dang, that's pretty awesome. How do we get one of those? So I think that means we came out pretty well in the end there.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should be proud. It's a pretty sweet site. It's just fun to play around in. I mean, I don't even know if I get the Sci-Fi Network. I'm going to have to admit that right now, but the site.
What
is
the hell,
just,
Kyle?
I'm sorry. I don't have time to watch television.
You're just admitting this now?
All right.
You don't even podcast know what we're talking about, Kyle. You're faking it.
No, we're talking about the website. We're not talking about the network.
Yeah, but like, you know, it integrates into video. Do you even know these shows? Do you know what Battlestar Galactica is?
I've heard of it.
Heard of it? What about?
I don't.
What about Firefly? Should it be brought back?
Too.
Yeah, it sounds like it should be.
All right, you get a pass.
Yeah, I'm so glad I'm the one that edits these podcasts.
This whole section's not even gonna make it.
Never going to go into it. But what I was going to say is, you guys should be proud because it is a sweet site, and you guys did some awesome work, so you should be proud of that. But let's. I'm going to start wrapping things up because. We're getting to that point where I don't want to keep everybody too long, but is there anything else you guys want to say? Any shout outs you want to give? Any thank yous, big things like that you guys like to put out there?
Absolutely. For as much as we went through it, so Herschel and I were both the only Lullabots who were on the project full time. We had a couple of contractors who the site would not have gotten where it was without these guys. So Mike Bailey, Jeremy Caldwell, Sid Shatria were the contractors on the project for the longest and really, spent so much time solving some of these problems and even putting in, you know, staying up till 4 a.m. on Christmas Eve to make sure video played. My God.
Yeah, we call that one the Christmas miracle that Mike Bailey pulled off.
Yeah, Mike Bailey's Christmas miracle, getting video to work right on the website. And then the other Lullabots that came in for part-time that, still, for even the short time that they came in and helped us out with some of the really heavy parts, I learned a lot from them and couldn't have gotten it done without them. So Helena on the front end, Chris Bullman on the front end, Wompy, Daniel Dalgo, you guys totally knocked it out of the park for us, and really honored to have you guys work on the team. So when you're out there listening to this, think of us.
Another shout out to Jeremy, who was really helpful and instrumental to kind of just meeting those deadlines. So thanks for that. And I also want to, of course, everybody at the Sci-Fi, you know, like,
yes,
Jeff Artis,
absolutely,
and Jesse and Matt, and I don't know if they listen to this podcast, but the people at Sci-Fi were just absolutely amazing to work with.
Yep, Nakia and Kelly. We actually had a transfer of project managers towards the end of the project too. So, and even that, it still went very smoothly. It was really smooth transition, and everyone kept up with it, and it was really a pleasure to work with that team out there as well. Very professional, very fun, very, very easy to work with.
Well, very cool. Again, I mean, Mike, I'm going to be honest with you. I just went to the shows page. I've never seen or heard of 99.9% of the shows.
Who are you, Kyle?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Kyle,
my respect for you is kind of dropping now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it was really high.
Okay, well, no, Kyle's got homework. Go on the Sci-Fi website and watch the video.
No. You're kind of ruining my dream.
What? Were you? I mean, was, you know, I was looking good to you as a possibility, and now I'm not because I don't watch Sci-Fi.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I did not mean to let you down. So as soon as we're done with this recording, I'm gonna go start watching all of this.
Yes.
There's only like 90 on there. I'm sure I could catch up pretty quickly.
There's a bunch of them.
And it wouldn't be hard because I'll be able to do it all on this awesome website.
Well, you have to authenticate to your local cable provider, but yeah.
Yeah, that we'll do that. Sweet. So, all right. Enough is enough, guys. Again, thank you so much. The site looks great, and I'm sure it's going to be cool for people to listen to this podcast to just hear all the crazy stuff you had to go through to make it happen, because it definitely looks like it took a ton. So be proud of yourselves.
Can I add one more thing in there, Kyle,
before
you shut us off? Helena Zubkow was on the project for a little while, and she did an amazing job. Her and I are doing an accessibility sort of working group here at Lullabot, and she went in and just cleaned up, you know, things that we didn't even know to look at, or that, you know, sort of got pushed to the side as we were trying to meet some of these deadlines, and made some amazing accessibility enhancements to try and make this available to everybody. So I want to make sure we give a special shout out to that she did some great work with some, I mean, I learned a ton just watching her go through and do some of the interactions with the keyboard and the color scheme stuff. So that was awesome to see.
Cool. Very cool. All right, guys, I appreciate your time and thank you very, very much. And to everybody else out there, just take a look at sci-fi.com and just enjoy it. Other than that, keep on drooplin'.